like that.
Yeah, now you're perfect. That's your distance right there.
Yeah, this feels a lot more comfortable.
Good. Speaking of feeling comfortable.
Oh, yeah.
Starting to feel comfortable here in White Belt Studios, as this will be episode number, I don't know. It depends
on when
we actually release.
We're in double digits now, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
This will probably be 13.
Damn. Oh, fuck. Friday the 13th's right around the corner.
Oh, shit. Should I release this on Friday the 13th?
Yo, if you do, we get murdered.
I'm releasing this on Friday.
We're going to have to fight Jason.
Bring it on. And this episode is brought to you by Toe Spacers, everybody.
Yes.
That I am most fashionably rocking as we speak. And
yeah.
Rick was horrified by the
yeah,
sight of.
Yeah, it looks like you were like in a foot fetish video and somebody jizzed on your feet. And it's just like soaking, like pooled in the webbing of your toes right now.
Yeah, you know,
he's got these little rubber ringlet things in it, and it's almost like it's one piece, right?
Yes,
it's one connected.
It's all connected. Thing. Yes, it's one item.
Now, do you like put it on top of your toes, or do you stick your toes through it?
You stick your toes through it.
Okay.
And I'm not gonna lie, if there were different colors available, I probably wouldn't have went with jizz translucent white.
Yeah, that's
probably would have went with a blue or a black or something along those lines. But
it's like when you buy remember back in elementary school, the little pencil holder things. So
yes.
Like your fingers wouldn't get tired.
The grippers?
Yes.
Dude, grippers were like it was the drug trade.
Yeah.
Back in fourth grade, man.
All the different colors.
You would get like that guy who actually had enough energy to like go to Staples.
Yeah.
Rather than just the school store. You're like, damn, this motherfucker got like the real shit.
His is like custom fitted to each groove of his finger. I just have this weird triangle.
He's got like that weird gel fitting. God damn. Just there's always that guy who had like the pencil he had invested in. It's like the guy who has like the really nice bike in the city that he's bought like all aftermarket parts for. There's always that guy in grade school who had the fucking lead mechanical pencil that he just geared out.
Yep. Committed to it. Or on the other side, they got a Ticonderoga that they wear down to the nub. Like where the gripper's literally sitting on the metal.
I was always parceled to the copper top. So that was my brand of choice. But yeah, the toe spacers are the latest endeavor of mine to fix my flat-footedness.
Yeah, I got some flat feet, but yours like I have like a slight arch that I have to emphasize it, and I'll get like a Charlie horse type cramp in there every once in a while.
Those are always creepy.
Yeah, but your feet are like you're smacking like a flipper.
Yeah, no, it's alarmingly bad. I'm quite aware. It's something that I didn't realize I had so significantly until maybe like a year ago.
Yeah.
But it so explains, man, when you open that Pandora's box of researching foot and ankle stability and overall just like strength training of that area, my goodness.
It's terrifying.
Yeah, because you realize everyone's are fucked up.
Yeah, no, nobody gets away from it.
No,
and you can see it go all the way up your leg. Like you see like, oh, that's where this starts. And then it goes to my knee. And now my knee's out at a weird angle. And then it goes all the way up into my leg. And you know my hip's fucked up because of that.
Yeah. I mean, every major postural issue could be traced back to the overall situation one has as it relates to their foot health and their foot performance.
All of that is why my shoulder's all sloped over on this side. I hate it.
No, that pronation or supination of the ankle and your foot literally affects everything up the chain.
Yeah.
And it's your connection. It's the first point of interaction you have with the earth. So if that goes awry, you can expect everything else.
It's like taking out pieces of the Jenga block right from the mid, like the bottom.
Yeah.
Like you don't take that bottom row out first. You go up higher. But no, we're like nature is taking out the bottom middle Jenga piece.
And if you go down this creepy rabbit hole, you find that like, you know, the whole sleepy glute syndrome everyone has. The oft mentioned on this podcast, anterior pelvic tilt, low back pain, all that stuff, usually for a decent amount of folks can be traced back to this wretched foot position.
Yeah.
And then also another reason for the foot spacers is I've never had issues with like bunion or hammer toe or any of that gross stuff, but man, a lot of narrow-toed shoes. Like, if you actually had a shoe that was wide enough to give your toes the room they need to splay out, to spread out. You'd be, you know, it would be very not fashionable, and I'm pretty sure why you don't see those.
There'd be a lot of clown shoes.
Yeah. I wear this, I looked up the Postural Restoration Institute's shoe recommendations.
Yeah.
And they recommend a Brooks Transcend series of shoe, and I bought it, and it does, in fact, have that wide toe box. And I can't tell you how many people.
I got to see this because it probably looks like a clown shoe, doesn't it?
It does. I can't tell you how many people.
Like an athletic clown shoe.
It was like, why are you like, what are you wearing? Like shit kickers? Like, what the hell is going on down there? Do you have a club foot?
That's what Rabdo the clown wears, is these fucking shoes.
Rabdo makes another appearance here on the pod. But, you know, I recall a few years ago, there was this guy on the Joe Rogan podcast, this guy, Nick Curson. I don't know if you've ever heard of him, but he's a strength coach for a lot of boxers and MMA fighters. And he has he's a descendant of the Marv Marinovich style of training. And I feel like, I'm not sure how much you know about Marv Marinovich, but I'm going to tell you right now, you would love him.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because he's crazy as fuck.
He sounds like a supervillain.
He kind of is.
He sounds like a Bond villain.
Have you ever heard of Todd Marinovich? That would be his son. Marvich,
I don't know the name.
Marv was an offensive lineman for the Oakland Raiders, I believe back in like the 60s or 70s. Okay. And he literally had to stop playing football because he got so fucking jacked. And he just kept taking steroids. That sounds like a weird thing to say, but is in fact true. He got too jacked to play the sport of jacked people.
Like he was too, like he couldn't move right?
He was just juiced to the fucking gills. And they were like, come on. I'm pretty sure he may have played on the same line, offensive line, as this guy, Lyle Alzado.
Yeah.
Who's a very famous steroided up guy. So maybe they were taking the same shit. But
that makes sense.
Marv becomes a strength and conditioning coach later on in life, as most steroided up guys tend to do. And he has some really weird views on training, which is actually very contrary to probably the style of thing he did to get so jacked that he couldn't play football anymore. He became very much convinced that plyometric and explosive styles of training were the truth, and that traditional weight training was only succeeding in shortening people's muscles and shortening people, basically tightening everybody up and kind of like making them, you know, there was causing all the tightness and the range of motion limitations. Whereas you would be able to be explosive, which is really the primary quality most sports are looking for.
Yeah.
And maintain your range of motion, your mobility, if you just train plyometrically all the time. And the real reason a lot of people know who Marv is because of what he did with his kid. He turned his kid into a test tube baby. He didn't let the kid even eat sugar until he was 18. He was doing medicine ball exercises in his crib. Like, what? Just crazy. If you, there's a 30 for 30.
How do you do this?
There's a 30 for 30 ESPN documentary about it. It's called the Todd Marinovich Project. And it's just talking about how the just insanity Marv, the lengths Marv went to in order to, like, they talk about him going to like the kiddie birthday parties at Chuck E. Cheese, and Marv made him bring his own like vegan sugar-free cake, and he wasn't allowed to.
And he's a vegan,
you know. Funny enough, that's actually where I think Marv fucked up, because he made the kid go vegan. He wouldn't allow him to eat any meat because he was convinced that the American meat supply was contaminated and full of toxins.
I feel like this guy is very much a victim of grass is always greener syndrome, where it's just like that one quality that he didn't quite have, that he's just like, that's the key. That's the secret.
Yes.
And then he made a weird like lab experiment out of his kid trying to breed Captain America over here.
Yeah, that's kind of what he was attempting to do. And so this Curson guy, anyways, by the way, Marinovich once trained, the reason he became relevant in the MMA community is because he trained BJ Penn, I believe, for a couple of fights. I know he trained him for the Diego Sanchez fight, which was like peak BJ.
Yeah.
So he was getting some positive pub in order, in based on what he did for him there in those fight camps. And then Curson is a descendant of his. And that is, he came on Joe Rogan and was talking about how, you know, weight training in the old school way is so limited and it causes all this tightness. And I disagree with just about every aspect of what he had to say, because he's completely ignoring, you know, the different constituent components of an exercise, of a lift.
Yeah.
That's the idea of lifting weights, is there is an eccentric phase, which is the lengthening of muscle tissue.
Yeah.
Which is followed by the opposite end of the range of motion, a concentric phase, which contracts the muscle tissue. Seems as if he is only aware of the concentric and not the eccentric. But the one thing I really agreed with him with was about the importance of foot health and foot strength for MMA fighters, because these motherfuckers are barefoot. If you're a boxer, you can just buy a particular pair of boxing shoes that have a lot of ankle support and mask that issue. But I think he was working with, at the time, Dos Anjos, RDA, and he had him doing on Instagram all this crazy... He was like balancing his on one foot on a foam roller and then like jumping to the next foam roller and not allowing his ankle to collapse inwards. It was pretty impressive stuff. But
it is, but it also...
dangerous stuff.
Yeah, it sounds... Ugh. Wait, like a foam roller like sitting on the ground...
Yes.
Like, so that it could roll.
Yes.
Like, is he...
Long
like,
ways, too. He's not doing it so that the ankle... You know what I mean?
So there's like, some, like, it,
the ankle is wobbling forward and backwards, wobbling from side to side.
Okay, that's a little bit less jarring.
Still so jarring.
It's still very terrifying.
It's, you know...
But you think about it, I mean, especially in MMA, like, just trying to throw kicks, if you got a flat foot, like, I have a hard time pivoting.
Oh, I can't. Like, I can't pivot.
Just that, like, trying to really pop up on the... If I'm wearing shoes and I'm just, like, hitting a bag, I'm all right. But if I'm actually at Royal Striking MMA, shout out.
Shout out.
Yeah, trying to throw a kick barefoot, like, I really have to focus and kind of flex that foot prior to the kick, which is, a like, just seconds off of your actual time in the movement.
You know, it's funny because I was actually at Royal the other day, and Aaron was talking to me about my pivot, because my pivot is terrible, so it's completely appropriate that he was talking to me about my pivot. But it's funny because in the back of my head, I wanted to tell him, like, what I really need is a lot of ankle insoles. Because I have the same problem. I just don't have that foot strength. And so, long story short, that is, you know, one of the few things I really agreed with, even though a lot of the stuff this guy had to say was outlandish.
Yeah.
Is the importance of foot health, particularly in the martial arts, because I mean, you're barefoot, you're just on your own in that regard. And that's, you know, the overall point too when it comes to MMA, and this is actually one of the things I like about what Rogan's doing, having all these different strength and conditioning guys on, is we have no idea what is appropriate in terms of strength and conditioning to better MMA performance.
No.
It's so fresh.
We're still like just figuring out how you should train to actually fight.
Yeah.
Like what technique will work and what technique won't.
That's an excellent point. I mean, you know, we've had this discussion before about neo striking and the difference between Western boxing and now Muay Thai. And now it's becoming this amalgamation of a little bit of everything. With strength conditioning, we're in the same situation, but even more premature. We just don't know. And that's why this guy can come out and kind of market himself as like, I have the truth. This is what is applicable to fighting. Everything else is bullshit.
Yeah.
But, you know, obviously.
Pay me.
at the time, too, he had a champion who he was training. So
Nick Curson or?
What's up?
Who was Nick Curson training?
Dos Anjos.
That's right.
Okay. And then he got whooped up by Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah.
Philly represent. He also trained Ruslan Provodnikov, who...
Ruslan.
I'll never forget. I'm pretty sure Provodnikov was the guy who put some sort of social media post out after one of his fights. I think it was after he fought Timothy Bradley, because that was just a knockdown, drag out, like both guys just landing body shots for 12 rounds. And he literally pissed like grape Kool-Aid. He's like, this come out of me after a fight. My coach said, not very healthy.
Yeah.
Very bad.
That's so all of this stuff works great if your guy is juiced to the gills.
That's there's that too.
It is strange how, like, people try to, you know, you see a lot of, like, reinventing the wheel when it comes to strength training.
Yeah.
And the guys who really, like, rise to the top are guys who stick to really, like, bare bones, pretty standard old school stuff.
stuff that's inarguable that it works.
Yeah.
Or if you really want to be like not even cutting edge, but bleeding edge, you do clutch cut fit performance. If anybody would like to have a giggle,
yes,
go to YouTube and type in clutch cut training, or I don't know what the I don't want to know what the fuck.
Did you ever what's the weird like air elliptical?
Yeah, the weird air shadow boxing.
Have you ever been to a fitness concert, Prince? What the fuck? Where is? I've never heard of anything like that.
I don't know. I don't know.
How do we sign up? But also, like, how, like, I'm assuming this is some public event. Are they serving booze at this? And people are going out into the crowd
and just
and jumping an imaginary rope?
Who knows? Maybe she just, like, bought, like, backstage passes to an actual, like, rock concert and just went on stage and did that. and just somebody caught a video of it.
She trains like Katy Perry.
It said that she trained Bradley Cooper, which makes me think so much less of Bradley Cooper.
I feel like she, like her and like three other people train Bradley Cooper.
Yeah,
I don't think she's Bradley Cooper's on-call trainer. I think it's the studio said, hey, this is the person we're using.
His real trainer was sick one day.
Yeah.
So she just covered the appointment.
Like, most people aren't really allowed to say the celebrities they've trained. Do you ever notice that?
Yes.
Like, unless it's somebody who's actually an athlete. Like, so there's some kind of, like, sworn to secrecy thing. Or it's somebody who's really not that famous, and you're just kind of clinging to somebody who had a guest credit on Stargate SG-1.
That is kind of a possible career path one can take in the fitness industry. It sounds stupid, but,
yeah.
I mean, there are, like, those handful of celebrity quote unquote trainers,
yeah,
who just moved to LA and almost follow the same trajectory that like an aspiring actor would be.
Yeah.
You know, Gunnar Peterson trained Stallone back in the day, and now he basically trains everyone of significance in Hollywood and makes, I think he charges something just absurd. Like, I don't know. I want to say like it's $50,000 an hour or something crazy.
It very well could be.
And then
could be five. Think of that.
Oh yeah, at least
five, that easy.
I think because actually Mark Bell had a episode of his like vlog that he does now called Hustle Mania, which is actually quite good.
Hustle Mania.
I know. I like
nice.
It. He's always the pro wrestling fan, Mr. Mark Bell. Well, you know, he trained John Cena to be a pro wrestler, right?
I did not know that.
Yeah, he had some weird financial stake in this thing called the Ultimate University Wrestling Academy.
Nice.
Out of which came John Cena.
Nice.
And I think they met.
John Cena!
They met at. And his name is John Cena. But I'm pretty sure they met at Gold's Gym Venice.
John Cena's going to be like 60 years old, and they're still going to like bring him out like that.
And he's still going to look like that, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Dude, no, he'll be all like gray and like kind of bald. His eyes will be like kind of sunken in his head.
Just like a half-assed, like, you know, version of his. Just, duh, duh,
duh, duh. It goes it'll be the same song. Lower. He'll just be slower running out.
It's just instead of the major chord, just the minor chords version of it. Just duh, 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 duh,
duh, duh, duh, duh. It'll be like the slow version of the Real American. I am a real American.
You know, it's
for the rights of
this
man.
Episode of Hustle Mania, Mark Bell goes to Gunnar Peterson's house, and it's full on like celebrity, you know, Hollywood Hills mansion.
Yeah.
And now there's a new guy trying to take his place named Ben Bruno, who actually has an excellent Instagram page. He's the guy who set me on to landmine training. He does a lot of landmine training with his clients in lieu of traditional barbell movements. And I stole it. I stole it from him. So.
And then I tried to steal it. Didn't and work out so
gave
well.
Gave some clients sciatica.
I did not give her sciatica.
All right.
It's
all
already right. There.
Client number
we
one.
We didn't focus on core strength enough before we went into this end of the pool. Also, I was doing the landmines wrong maybe, but who knows?
Who knows? It's
could be anything, really.
Well, you know, that's the one thing I'll say about the strength and conditioning industry in, you know, the preparation of athletes for various sporting events and you know, sports and whatnot, is that I think the general weight training population, like us, guys like us who just like weight training, obviously we're in the industry, so that changes things. But imagine if we were just who we are, but not in the fitness industry full time. We become strangely attached to these classical versions of movements. So if you do a deadlift, it has to be with a straight bar, or you're a pussy.
Yeah.
And it, you know, if you squat, it has to be a low bar, or you're a bitch.
Yeah. And low bar, ass to grass.
And it's just one of those things where
A2G, baby.
You know, even taking an example from my own training career, I guess you could say, and that's training myself, not training others. Although I guess this rule applies for training others as well. You know, I've got various back issues now that I didn't used to have, and I just think my body generally is a little bit. I kind of came to the conclusion the other day over the course of a conversation with you that, you know, when I moved to Philadelphia, I was in excellent physical shape. I was the strongest I had ever been, but, you know, the process of having to get my life together and pay my bills and understand what it's like to live in a new city on my own and build my life from scratch, that took a wee bit of time off the off the plate, so to speak.
Suddenly, I have to make these 2,500 calorie meals myself.
Yeah, and, you know, I basically never lifted. I haven't lifted in the same way that I did all those years ago, ever since I moved here. So, you know, coming to the conclusion that I basically took 3 years off of lifting and now trying to get back in, I kind of had to swallow my ego a little bit, because maybe what was once appropriate for me when I left off 3 years ago is no longer even remotely appropriate for me. And, you know, a practical example of this was deadlifting. You know, obviously I am a big believer in compound movements being at the core of every workout and every program and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always had deadlift day, and of course I'm going to deadlift with a straight bar. Why the hell wouldn't I do anything? You have to use the conventional deadlift, the 5-step deadlift process. But
thank you for joining us, Coach Hrippletoe.
Coach Hrippletoe. But yeah, you know, after yet another session where, you know, my
he's so internally rotated, his shoulder is literally tucked into
yeah,
itself.
Like yet another session after my low back was feeling all sorts of saucy, I was like, you know what? Maybe the trap bar ain't the worst thing in the world.
Yeah.
And I kind of really considered, like, if I'm never going to compete in a powerlifting competition ever again, which I'm probably not going to, why am I so committed to this idea of having to do this movement with a straight bar? And I had no answer to that question. And I realized I was just being an idiot. And I think, you know, a lot of these performance coaches, the Joe DeFrancos of the world and those like him, you know, they're in situations where they have multi-million dollar athletes who are trying to prepare for whether it be their season or their fight or WrestleMania. He trains a lot of wrestlers. And if you fuck these guys up, man, I mean, if you're a power lifter, you know, there's no denying that deadlifting a barbell as opposed to a trap bar or kettlebells or whatever the hell else places a little bit more stress on the low back, because the load is anterior.
Yeah.
It's in front of you. So
you're literally
always
trying to make it move somewhere that it physically cannot move.
Yes. And, you know, when you use something like a trap bar, like that load is more centralized throughout your whole body, and it's not just you deadlifting something that is in front of you.
Yeah.
But if you're a powerlifter, obviously that juice is worth the squeeze, because you have to do that movement. That movement is 33% of your sport. So you can't not do it. But if you're just someone looking to use a hip hinge pattern and, you know, strengthen the muscles associated with that pattern, who gives a shit if you use a straight bar or a trap bar or a kettlebell or a landmine or whatever else? It doesn't matter. All you're trying to do is get stronger. There's lots of different ways to do that. And it's not, you know, but yet so many people are just strangely addicted or committed to this idea of doing the traditional forms of the movements. And I don't know. I just in my own training and a lot of my clients as well, I've just found that, you know what, I'm being a little bit dogmatic here.
Yeah.
And
do you really need to be able to do this?
Yeah. And
That's kind of how, what I've noticed the same thing with my own clients is that, like, I don't really, while I believe anybody who's, like, really trying to take the shit seriously should train with a barbell, I don't train all of my clients with a barbell, or I at least don't do everything with a barbell.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like, kettlebell deadlifts that I do. Or there's a lot of more body weight based exercise because, like, they're not, I'm not training this person to go into a ring at any point in the near future.
And you're not training them to compete in a strength sport either. Yeah. They're not going to be a power lifter or a strong man or an Olympic weightlifter. Like, you know,
they just want to be able to breathe easier and they don't want their back to hurt when they get something from off the top of the fridge.
I participated recently in a fitness, a corporate fitness event. And all I can say is, so the challenge had these people doing various relatively regressed forms of movements. I think the you know, chronology of lifts they had to do, that's not the right way to use chronology. Fuck it. It kind of works. You all got it. You know, I think the first station was TRX rows. The second station was these things they called plank hops. So
what?
It's kind of like doing a mountain climber, but like it's with both feet hopping forward.
So then, it's like a squat thrust kind of.
But no, you were in like a push-up, plank push-up position, and then you would hop your feet forward and then hop them back into a plank position. And you were holding, they were doing that for time.
So so you're like holding the plank.
And then doing mountain climbers, quick. Basically. Yeah. They had kettlebell squats, which in my opinion looked more like kettlebell deadlifts, but fuck it. They were, had them doing push-ups with a hand release. They had them do, in the past, I did a different event, similar event, and they had people doing kettlebell swings, and that was heinous. And man, that is my biggest problem with those in the fitness industry and kind of like the general approach to, you know, on the surface, it seems like that event is a good idea, right? Get these corporate desk pound people, have them participate in this strength training section. And there was other courses too. They did strength training first, in which they did the aforementioned exercises.
Yeah.
Then they went to a little like agility obstacle course, and then they did like a mile run.
Well, that's so fun.
Yeah, like it was fun, and there,
it sounds like a good time.
And you know what? I think that they tried to do something that resembled strength training and failed, but you know, on the surface, it seems as if that should be something that can be allowed to be had, right?
Yeah.
But it's just not reality.
Yeah.
People do not give strength training and the physiology associated with it the respect it deserves. They just approach it as this, you know, I think a lot of people would be shocked to learn that a push-up is a very advanced movement.
Yeah, it's really complicated to get, like, it's from the floor. Trying to get somebody to do that who has no prior experience with any kind of strength training. Somebody who spent a good 30-some years not really being that active.
And
now you want them to do 20 push-ups.
And doing plank hops.
Yeah.
Burpees. Burpees were one of the events. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Which, if you can't do a push-up, don't do a burpee. And if you're not doing a push-up and you're burpee, you're not doing a burpee.
I felt so bad for these people, too, because every single one of them, at least, you know, 80% of them at one point I saw grabbing their back.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, God, I feel this in my back. And I was
that's
like,
that's where you hit that weird point of that, like, oh, it's better than them doing nothing.
No.
But is it really? Like, they weren't pushing limits that aren't ready to be pushed yet.
It was hard to watch, and I was in a context where the whole thing is a race too, by the way.
Yeah.
So do these advanced movements really fucking quick, everybody.
Yeah.
So do, you know, take that awful technique you have and do as many reps with it as you possibly can in 3 minutes, and then we're going to move on to the next thing that you're not ready to do. And
yeah.
You know, I don't think there's enough policing of events like that. There's a lot of shit like that going on. There's a lot of group exercise classes at local fitness centers that have push-ups and squatting and all this stuff involved. And these people are just displaying heinous and dangerous technique.
Yeah.
People don't give the subject of strength training and working out the respect scientifically that it deserves. They just don't do it.
Yeah.
It is, you know, but yet a physical therapist, you walk into a physical therapist's office and everything's like, oh, wow, this, you know, I'm struggling to articulate the point I'm trying to make, but I think you understand. Like, it's all of a sudden,
This rant against physical therapists caught me off guard.
No, but you walk into a physical therapist's office and all of a sudden you're like ready to learn and you're ready to be foundational and you're going to be patient with learning to do these. You're going to be overly conservative with your progressions, but yet you leave the physical therapist's office, you go to the local commercial fitness center.
And you want them to kick your ass until you can't breathe and you want to feel the sorest you've ever been in your life the next day.
And you take classes that have you doing all these, you know, fucking the aforementioned plank hops and burpees and all this heinous shit that's not appropriate for you.
Yeah.
And you're wondering why your lumbar spine feels like it was severed the day after when you wake up.
Yeah.
You know, and that's another thing, too, is I've become convinced that the lumbar spine is just a flaw in the human design.
We weren't supposed to have it.
One of my clients, actually, I've had those back issues I was talking with you about, and I think my inability to breathe and brace properly and utilize that Valsalva maneuver is a big part of my pain. But I was thinking on it, and it was a hypothesis that was presented to me by one of my clients who is a physician. So he does have quite a bit of room to talk here as far as, a point I'm about to make about the Valsalva maneuver. And he's also a brain doctor. So, you know, long story short, his argument was that, you know, the Valsalva maneuver is necessary in order to lift heavy weights. Number one, in order to support the aforementioned flaw in the human design, your lumbar spine.
Yeah.
And also, to protect basically your internal organs, your breathing and bracing to protect that entire midline, including the lumbar spine. And if you don't utilize some sort of abdominal breathing and bracing where you're trying to lift heavy weights, awful things will happen to you.
Yeah. I used to do that for a shockingly long amount of time, deadlifting without any kind of bracing. I was like, why does my back want to snap in the middle?
Because you're literally telling it to snap.
That's what I found out.
And, you know, there's two points here about the Valsalva. Number one, you know, there was this Eric Cressy article I read some time ago about Olympic weightlifting shoes or squat shoes. And he talked about if you can't get into a squat pattern that resembles the one that you can get into with squat shoes, without squat shoes. So basically, like, if you're just using the squat shoes to improve an already good pattern, that's okay. But if you're using the squat shoes to cover up a massive deficiency and your squat with shoes looks nothing like your squat without the Olympic weightlifting shoes, you're just building strength on deficient pattern. Yeah. And that's no different than just squatting right through a butt wink. And my idea here is, if you have to do this weird, super intense breathing and bracing just to lift these heavy weights, it's kind of, and I know this is completely contrary to everything we've ever espoused on this podcast or to, you know, our clients in the professional setting, but should you be lifting these heavy ass weights if you need to do this crazy breathing mechanism just in order to do it without really fucking yourself up?
I mean, if you're doing it right, like if you're breathing properly and you're actually locking everything in.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's an answer to this, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I don't think we know.
No.
Because there's just not enough research being done on this specific topic. But, and then my second point about it was the doctor who I was talking about, who's a client of mine, the brain doctor, he talked about how the Valsalva maneuver also increases your intracranial pressure quite significantly. So literally,
it just sounds terrible.
Yes, exactly.
Sounds like something that's not good.
And, you know, when you add up how many Valsalvas your average strength trainee is using over the course of a work week or a workout week, I mean, it's pretty fair to say it's probably a few hundred reps, right? So in a month, you might hit 1,000. So you're talking north of potentially 10,000 Valsalvas a year. And I'm not saying that the Valsalvas and the increase of the pressure intracranially is equivalent to a concussion or a hit, a traumatic head contact you can receive in a football game per se. But what if it's like, 1/10 of it?
Yeah, it's just like over pumping a tire.
Yes.
Like it's like a bike tire that's just like getting just a little too full and blows up like yours did right next to my head the other day.
Yeah, literally. It's a true story. Don't let your tires dry rot, folks. It's scary.
Yeah.
You'll be checking yourself for bullet holes when your bike tire just randomly explodes in the middle of a conversation. Hopefully while you're not on it, like I was not. Thankfully.
Yeah, that would have been terrible.
That would have been real bad. But yeah, I mean, even if it's 1/20th of the brain trauma that a concussion represents, again, the amount of repetitions you're doing, what if that person who's doing 10,000 Valsalvas a year, you know, I'm not any good at math, but if it's 1/20th, that's a few concussions a year.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously the counter argument to this is going to be, you know, you can go look at Ed Cohen, the greatest powerlifter of all time, and he's fine. I'm sure he had a more than a few.
Not all those guys are fine, though.
You're right, but I've never
What's
once
our degree
heard.
Of fine.
I guess this would be a relatively new hypothesis here. I mean, I've never heard of a connection between weightlifting. I mean, look at Schwarzenegger. I mean,
yeah.
He was lifting some pretty serious weights after. Sure, he had to Valsalva a few times when he was military pressing 405.
Yeah, this is true.
But, you know, obviously he doesn't have any traumatic brain injury that we're aware of. But
I mean, it's like retired football players and concussions. Like, you know, it's you don't see it in the, you know, I'm on TV, let me smile and shake hands. Versus the day-to-day, like, standing in the middle of a room for, like, 20 minutes not realizing how much time just went by.
There's also not a ton of famous lifters, right? There's a lot of famous football players.
Yeah.
But there's, what is there, 10 ever famous lifters? Perhaps we just don't or aren't aware of enough of them to see that this is, in fact, an issue that hits you later in life.
Is there any accounts of any kind of, like, named power lifter or strongman type guy going all Chris Benoit?
That is an excellent question. I know a pretty decent amount about, I guess the only, no, I don't want to bring that up. That'll be a whole,
it's a whole other topic.
A whole other topic. Like, yes.
Open the door to.
I was going to mention this gentleman named, you know, this sounds terrible because I'm asking it after going Chris Benoit. This is a totally positive example of this. This is a person
so
did
it's
not
the exact opposite of going Chris Benoit.
But it's the only, you know, potentially. Never mind.
So is this a guy, like, basically a guy whose personality changed 180 degrees?
Yes.
From what he,
yes.
How he was.
It was a definite personality change. But again, that's me judging. Perhaps this individual. I was talking about Matt Krajaleski,
that is now, what is her name?
I believe Janae Krajaleski. And, you know, but that's ignorant of me because perhaps he had these thoughts about himself for a very long time.
That
and just
could
didn't.
Very well be the motivation to be big, strong.
Oh, absolutely. Struggling with that, you know, situation could lead to the embattled inner dialogue that would lead one to those great feats of strength. And by the way, she continues to be an amazing strength athlete. So even through, I'm sure that there's some degree of hormone therapy that's probably going on there that has the potential to mess with strength levels a little bit. But still lifting a hell of a lot more weight than I could ever hope to. So
I'm never probably going to come close to that.
Yeah. And you know, she seems generally happy, so that's, you know, there was a lot of takes about that situation when she came out of the closet, so to speak, when Matt Krajaleski shared the news that he intended to become Janae Krajaleski. There was a lot of, you know, did steroids do this? Is it a mental health thing? But, you know, on that topic, I believe everyone
neither
should be
of us
able to
are
do.
Informed enough to really.
Exactly. But all I can say is I doubt it has anything to do with the Valsalva maneuver.
No.
But
no.
Who knows? Is
not
real...
quite. Yes. Very much not Chris Benoit-ing your family.
Yes. That is certainly not the case. That's why I tried to preface this by saying this is a positive example, but one that also included a pretty 180, or at least on the surface level, change of behavior.
Yeah. It's too small to really put in like a sample size.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I don't know how the hell we got here from corporate fitness people grabbing their lumbar spines.
It's useless. We just need like a robot, like diaper thing, like just a cybernetic.
My exoskeleton.
Yes.
Idea?
Yeah. Let's just make a cybernetic.
I won't share any further details of that.
Ugh.
Also, current events, Richard.
Oh yeah.
UFC 216 is relevant as we are somewhat of an MMA podcast. You were not able to watch, am I correct?
No.
Okay, so the two things one must take away from UFC 216. Number one, Demetrius Mighty Mouse Johnson is probably the GOAT, but no one cares because he is 125 pounds.
Yeah.
And he had a flying armbar on this dude, Ray Borg, that was just... You haven't seen it yet? As I talk here, pull it up.
Okay.
You must see this.
I'm gonna watch this.
It's probably, undoubtedly, I'm going to say here, it's probably the best submission in UFC history. It's probably the best submission I've ever seen, short of Anderson Silva getting caught in that flying heel hook in Pride. Have you ever seen that?
Oh, yeah.
Ryo Shonan, or whatever the guy's name.
That one in a million. Did that guy ever get put in the UFC?
No, I don't think he was ever anything special.
They'll book Connor's rival, but they haven't even come close to being.
You know, I am excited going back to Mighty Mouse, though, because I think he's finally, truly cleaned out a division. There is no one left. The only guy who he hasn't fought is Sergio Pettis, and he could fight him, and I think that would do... I don't think any of his fights do great numbers, but I think that one would probably do at least as much as any of his other fights. Probably do as much with that one as he did with Joseph Benavidez, just because Sergio Pettis is a brand name, so to speak. But now I think we're finally going to get Mighty Mouse super fights, which will be very, very welcomed. And that poor guy has to...
Who is he going to fight in a super fight? All right, hold on. We got it.
I'm excited to see you. No, that's not it.
Doesn't look like they're going to fly.
He fought Ray Borg, not Wilson Hayes. Wilson Hayes, by the way, once trained out of Philadelphia.
Yes, he did.
Wilson Hayes.
Shout out to BJJ United.
Never mind. Type in... this is great podcasting. Type in Mighty Mouse Ray Borg. Armbar. That should be it.
Borg.
I must get your reaction.
The full fight.
No, never mind. Fuck it.
Yeah, it's
not working out. You got to go to Twitter for these things. Yeah, you can't search YouTube.
Well, anyway. This is why we need a red band. That's what this is.
Yeah, I know. The guy.
We need the guy off screen to pull this up while we keep talking.
Well, the other relevant news to come out of the event was obviously the main event in that Tony Ferguson beat Kevin Lee. And that basically, the reason that's relevant is because now he becomes the obvious choice for Connor's next fight. And Connor, kind of unfortunately here, or fortunately for him, unfortunately for the sport as a whole, is really the only relevant fighter.
Yeah, it's bittersweet in a lot of ways.
It's as we've mentioned before on this podcast, it seems as if boxing has kind of actually stolen away some of the positive momentum that the UFC once had on boxing. It's kind of that never-ending tug of war is now strangely in favor.
And again, the number one guy in the sport of mixed martial arts lost to the number one guy in another sport.
Well,
in a fight that questionably shouldn't have happened.
Something I'd like to correct that we talked about on a previous podcast, and we were talking about
Canadian just there. Something I wanted to correct that we talked about.
A little GSP. But in a previous podcast, we were talking about why, in fact, there's more money in boxing. And I don't think we articulated it, or at least I didn't articulate it the way that I wanted to. And the reason there's more money in boxing is because there is no league that takes its cut of the revenue.
Yeah.
The UFC is probably making a lion's share. Actually, if you want to be specific, the UFC is making all of the money and then dispersing it to its employees.
Yes.
And the WBC is not doing that. I'm pretty sure the WBC employs like two people and like rents some office space off of like a Kinko's.
Yeah.
It is nothing, and it makes no money.
It's a theoretical company. It doesn't even. There's nobody anywhere.
They have
nobody
belts.
Clocks in for them.
Yes, their clock in hours are zilch.
Yeah,
but the UFC is much different. And again, going back to that previous conversation we had on one of our last shows, that was really the innovation that the UFC hoped to bring to the table. They wanted to be a relevant league, not just a relevant fighter. Because boxing goes through periods where there are no relevant fighters.
Yeah.
You know, now that Floyd Mayweather retired, actually a lot of people were worried that that's the sort of period we were about to head into. Now, obviously, a lot of people surfaced. Canelo, Triple G, although Triple G obviously doesn't have a ton left. He's 38 years old, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
Anthony Joshua is going to be a stud for a long time. So... fortunately for them, and obviously Conor brought a lot of spotlight to the sport too. It doesn't seem like that's going to be the case, but I mean, there's a lot of different times where there's just no eyes on boxing whatsoever because they're so dependent upon that transcendent superstar. And yeah. That was what Dana was hoping to avoid by putting the onus on the UFC, on the league,
yeah.
Not on the individual. And then, as we've mentioned plenty of times before, Conor completely incinerated that entire,
yes.
Because I don't think that's possible in fight sports.
Well, I think it's a combination of factors that happen. I think it's the combination of Conor, of John Jones, and Ronda Rousey.
Yes,
Ronda Rousey had a book come out. She was the
Brock
superstar.
Lesnar too. Don't forget Brock Lesnar.
Brock Lesnar too, but Brock Lesnar brought celebrity to the UFC,
yeah.
By coming from wrestling. I'm talking about in terms of people who are
homemade
through and through,
yeah.
Went through the UFC to become what they are.
Yes.
And Brock Lesnar proved himself in the UFC, but he was a star well before that.
Yeah, he's a unicorn.
Yeah. And yeah, you're not going to get very many people crossing over into UFC anytime soon.
Well, that actually...
UFC, MMA in general.
That parlays perfectly into something that I wanted to make mention of, which is Kevin Lee. You know, I have written here in my notes that I don't think that the UFC probably loved last night because they couldn't lose.
Yeah.
Tony Ferguson's very marketable. I mean, he doesn't do great numbers, but he can talk. And if you give him that big Conor fight, he could, you know, return
That'll be some fun shit talk.
Yeah, that would be a good build-up. But I do think if you got one of them in a private moment, they would have told you that they were really pulling for Kevin Lee. And in fact, the whole... Ariel Helwani even alluded to this in one of his interviews with Kevin Lee. He said, you know, this whole event almost seems like it was thrown for him.
Yeah.
This was Kevin Lee's coming out party. He was supposed to beat Tony because he's got the look. He's young. He could talk. He knows what he's doing. He showed up at the press conference with a fucking shirtless with a leather vest, like Gucci sunglasses, in overalls that weren't buttoned. He knows what he's doing.
He
he's,
might as well have been Chris Jericho.
Yeah, and he's got the swag. He's got, you know, he's got a great story. He's from Detroit, and the people of Detroit are super supportive of him, you know, and travel to see him fight. And, you know, he was definitely their guy, but unfortunately for him, I think that's why you saw him so devastated in the aftermath of the fight after he got submitted by Tony, because he knew, you know, it's just crazy how unforgiving the fight game is, because he was on the precipice of that money fight with Conor.
Yeah.
He probably would have had a $20 million payday. He could never work again if he didn't want to. He could go back to Detroit and fucking buy the state capitol if he wanted to. $20 million. He could go buy Ford.
Yeah.
And just revitalize the city. But, you know, he... But now, even in the aftermath of the fight, he was very honest in that the weight cut takes a lot out of him. So he goes from, you know, that one loss takes him from that Conor fight potentially happening to probably having to move up a weight class to welterweight and now having to completely rise up the ladder once again.
Yeah.
So,
and that's why I think that's a hindrance in a lot of ways of having the company be the arbiter of everything there. Cause there's been a lot of different guys who they've attempted to prop up that have just never quite gone to like been able to do
Sage,
it.
Sage Northcutt.
I was literally just about to say that. Remember when Sage Northcutt was supposed to be the next guy?
Yeah, he just sucked.
When is Sage Northcutt going to fight anybody of relevance?
Well, he fought Mickey Gall. And,
how'd that go?
They should do Sage versus CM Punk.
That should have been the fight. Actually, that's not a terrible idea.
Hey, Mickey Gall beat up Sage. So
Mickey Gall's a superstar.
Theoretically, Sage is lower on that totem pole. He's a better matchup, theoretically, for CM Punk. I wonder what he's doing, CM Punk. I wonder if he's still training or if he's just like, yeah, that was a thing.
I almost feel like that's probably what he did.
I mean, so I don't think he made that much money, though. I think CM Punk...
He still made a million.
Surprise, right? Surprise. I mean, CM Punk has a massive ego, but like he's a very smart guy. But I, honest to goodness, got a sense when I listened to him speak about this that he thought he was like a real badass because he was a wrestler.
Yeah.
And that like being a wrestler showed that he was tough and it wasn't that far away from the real thing. I think he's just kind of a nerd.
Yeah.
Who got caught up in his own. But I don't know. Like that, I just sincerely think.
I know a lot of snarky hipster assholes who love wrestling, who loved CM Punk. Who
yeah.
Wanted CM
Punk. You mean
Punk
the Second City
it.
Saint, bro? That is a cool fucking nickname, by the way.
It is pretty cool.
I will give that to you, Mr. CM.
Mr. Cool, Punk.
Cool nickname. But yeah, man, it was also very kind of gross in that Kevin Lee had this big old staph infection right on his tit.
I need to see that. Let me pull this picture up. That'll be a lot quicker.
You know, you wonder if that's like something they have to make Tony Ferguson aware of. Like, hey, you're about to fight a guy. You're about to go rub your face potentially. Like, what if they're in the clinch or something and Tony's eye is rubbing up against this staph infection? How do you even let that fight go on?
He hid the staph infection from the NSAC and UFC.
Really?
Nobody knew about it until he showed up.
I mean, what about the situation I just mentioned, right? Let's say they're like chest to chest. Tony goes for an underhook so his eye level drops down to like the nipple line. And his eye rubs up against a staph infection. Like that's brutal. I mean, that's potentially... I mean, he could lose his eye. He could die. I have no idea how that...
Yeah, I see it. There it is.
I have no idea how they let that go on. I mean, Tony probably has to immediately go to the hospital and get a dosage of antibiotics. I mean, he just rubbed up against a staph infection. I don't know enough about staph infections. Are they transmittable via touch? Kind of have to be, don't they?
But staph infections being transmitted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's pretty much exactly what happens. What's that? And it's just the combination of bacteria that gets to fester. Like you could probably, like I said, like if they had like just a bunch of like Clearasil disinfectant wipes off to the side to just
Herb Dean, just like stop. brings out a wipey.
Yeah. Just patting down anywhere that Tony Ferguson made contact with Kevin Lee's chest. I think it would have been all right. But also see Tony. I could see Tony Ferguson just being the type of guy like, I don't give a shit. Let's fucking do this.
You know, it's funny too because you could kind of tell that the weight cut did in fact take a little bit too much out of Lee because the way he got caught, he was kind of just hanging out in Tony's guard. And I mean, that has to be number one on the list of things not to do when your coaches are outlining your game plan to fight Tony Ferguson.
Yeah.
Don't hang out in his guard. Don't hang out in a fucking Eddie Bravo black belt 10th planet guy's guard. Don't do that. Ugh. Perhaps they have a wee bit of dexterity when it comes from what's that?
It's just a bit, you know, they might be able to pull out a twister on you.
You know, that's actually one thing I actually really like a lot of Eddie Bravo's ideas and I think he's an infuriating person sometimes because the conspiracy shit is funny, but
it's not funny to him. It's very serious.
Yeah, and like just even bringing it up like completely derails their fight companions. I love how they also have like kind of stopped inviting him to the fight companions.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't think his system is capable of being replicated by somebody like me.
No.
Someone like you.
I could do some Eddie Bravo.
You could
shit.
Do some fucking 10th Planet, my friend.
Yeah. You I almost bought the book at one time.
You can get your, not your blue belt, but you can get your blue rash guard.
Yeah.
That's
I would wear that more as a badge of honor. Is that weird?
But you could wear your blue jiu-jitsu rash guard.
No, but I'm a white rash guard.
But you're a white belt in life, goddammit. That also parlays into rash guards. We are also white rash guards in life, if you are considering us under the Eddie Bravo 10th Planet rules.
Yes. I have a white rash guard at home. I'm going to start wearing it every time we record.
Yes. And that's, you're sweating over there. And your white belt in life rash guard. We could make rash guards. That could be a marketing thing. But unfortunately, it's also incapable of, or impossible rather, to ignore all of the... the UFC did a pretty good job of plastering Vegas Strong all over the goddamn place, which means that we probably have to somehow offer a little bit of breakdown as to our viewpoints of the unfortunate events.
Yeah.
And I'll say this. The one thing that concerns me more so than anything other about topics like this is that wee bit of nervousness that arises when I or you make mention of this, even on a podcast that we record in a basement that not many people listen to.
Yeah.
Like, that's concerning that there's a democratic society in which that is the reality of discussion.
Let's fucking do it.
It's
I ain't scared of shit.
But it's I don't obviously, you know, gun control is now at the once again at the forefront. Although I will say that the creepy thing is that I already kind of sense the policy change talk going away.
It always does.
A couple of days. That's all you get out of it. Yeah.
There's never any, like, they ought to do something. But, well, because I feel like that's why there's so many varied opinions on what should be done. And, like, there's people who want to take all the guns away. There's people who want to take some of the guns away, but really just want to make it harder to get guns. There's people who, you shouldn't be allowed to open carry. You should be able to open carry everywhere. And I should be given a gun at birth. And blah, 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 blah. Like, I was actually reading the reviews for The Punchline. The comedy club, the reviews on Facebook, and one of them was complaining about how, man, it really tells you about the type of rough crowd they cater to. They got a metal detector at the front door, and they told my cop friend that he wasn't allowed to bring in his service pistol. Ooh, anti-cop much? No, like, they're worried about a mass fucking shooting, because those things happen at events with a lot of people.
And only two doors.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to be afraid of there. And yeah, you might be a cop, but there's some cops who go off the deep end from time to time. Like, fucking, they're not immune.
Who was that guy, that LAPD officer who went fucking crazy and they found him like dead in a cabin in the woods a couple of years ago?
Did they find him dead in a cabin, or did they have to go after him in a cabin?
One of those is Dorner? I don't remember. What's up?
Richard Dorner, I think his name was. Big guy,
yes.
Right?
Yeah. Chris Dorner.
Chris Dorner. Yeah, yes. Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
He, you know,
wrote that manifesto where he gave a shout out to Tim Tebow and how he really had high hopes for him.
Yes. Weird.
That wasn't why he, like, you know, it was about corruption and the LAPD, blah, blah, racism. I understand some extreme measures being taken, but you do you. But then to throw the Tim Tebow shout out at the end, like, this, he was like an Army Ranger or something. He was like big. Like, he was a.
There's a lot of training in that. It's, you know, it's. I always try to construct political issues first in a vacuum because I feel as if that gives me a genuine representation of how I truly approach the issue.
Yeah.
And in a vacuum, I think that people should have the right to own and responsibly use guns in some capacity.
Yeah.
A little iffy on assault rifles. And I'm a little iffy on where you should be able to conceal carry.
Yes.
Now let's talk about some other fundamental ideas. Do I think that going about the purchase of a gun should be similar to going about the ability to drive a car, per se. That seems reasonable.
Or getting at least a license.
Because you have to jump through these hoops in order to get your driver's license, because you can endanger someone if you use that car irresponsibly. Sounds a lot like something else.
Sounds
right?
More like a gun.
Yeah, so the idea that one would have to go through some sort of process in order to acquire a gun seems pretty reasonable, considering the same criteria we introduced those same processes in place prior to getting a vehicle also apply and are relevant to the process of, you know, the fears potentially of getting a gun.
Yeah.
And what saddens me is that, you know, all the stuff we just mentioned, and by the way, other things can be considered too. Cigarettes are legal, even though everyone knows they're pretty risky. So you know what we did? We made them really expensive and taxed the piss out of them. Yeah. You can still get them.
And do it more and more every few years.
You can get as many cigarettes as you would like.
Yeah.
But, you know, what if we raise the prices of ammunition just a little bit? You still buy as much as you want.
As a smoker, they've even gone so far as to make cigarettes safer over the years. Like, they literally do, like, they make what's called a fire-safe cigarette, where they, cigarettes that are made now versus what you, like, if somebody were to roll their own cigarette with a little piece of paper. Sounds like I'm talking about rolling a joint, but I'm not. But the majority of cigarettes on the market now have these little plastic rings on them so that they're set to go out after a certain amount of time of not being smoked.
Okay.
So that it actually stops. So you can't just like burn it to the filter and light your house on fire.
Yeah.
If you pass out drunk with a cigarette.
Seems like a pretty good feature.
Which is like that, but it's like that you can't get a cigarette that doesn't have that anymore. Like,
yes.
That's how far it's come. We can't make guns that are set to be safer over time. Like, you can't make a gun that is mandatory that it be locked, you know, or you can't make it mandatory. Like, don't they have guns that are, like, fingerprint operated now, or is that just some Judge Dredd shit that I'm imagining?
I am not a gun guy. Never have been. So yeah. I'm pretty ignorant to the latest technology as it relates to firearms, but I mean, yeah, like all of that stuff, again, seems pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
But I think we're at the point where you have to just acknowledge that we are just a little bit, you know, as a country, there's some weird gun shit just embedded in the culture.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not the biggest fan of either. I like Bill Maher a little bit. I'm not, you know, obviously a Uber fan or anything, but I enjoy his show from time to time, and he had Billy Crystal, who I'm really not a fan of typically. But they actually
for
had
different
a funny
reasons, I feel like.
But they had a funny conversation, and Billy Crystal, obviously this is a joke, but in a weird way I also feel as if it kind of makes mention of how deeply ingrained gun culture is to the culture. And he's talking about, you turn on a football game and Joe Buck is like, the quarterback's got the receiver in his crosshairs, launches a bullet right down the middle, hits him, bullseye, dead on. It's just like, man.
Shot straight in the chest.
Yeah, it's, you know, is that's a, that he's got a rifle for an arm. There's just a lot of that going around, and it's, you know, it's just sad. I also, again,
dropping bombs out there.
In a vacuum, I'll tell you what. If they do ever create some sort of policy in which they're going to go after people who already have guns, God bless the motherfuckers who sign up for that job.
Yeah.
Who's that guy? Who are those people?
Yeah, that's going to be a tough one.
That's a rough one, man.
Yeah.
Honestly, that is an impossibility.
Yeah.
You would have to allow those people to die with their guns. And just
you
allow
literally
newborn
have to pry it from their cold dead hands.
Yes, because you know, well, I'm sure that would be the next thing though. I can't leave my gun to my grandson.
Yeah.
This is my property.
It's been in my family for generations. We fought the Revolutionary War, the Civil War.
Goddamn feds come in and take my fucking Ulysses S. Grant replica pistol. But And you know what? We shouldn't even make fun because that's, you know, unfortunately what got us here in the first place with this far right versus far left. And I think the real problem here is too much media. Yeah. And I think that might also be behind this weird, sadistic, awful game that we now find ourselves in as a society, where every disaster has to outdo and out terrify the previous disaster. Yeah. That actually is a thing. There is some weird virus that has infected the culture of this country as it relates to these shootings.
Yeah.
Where I don't know how you get rid of that, but you have to. You cannot continue to allow the one to upstage the next. And that seems to be
what happens each and every time. Like when you saw it, when the numbers first came out, where it was, what was it, 58 dead?
Yeah, just
like 515 injured. Like that's like a bomb going
those
off.
Those are D-Day numbers.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that is insanity. I mean, literally and figuratively, it's insanity. Yeah. And I don't know. It's tough because I don't claim to be all knowing. I don't claim to know what exactly the answer is, but I think one can agree that something must be done and that it's going to be tough to get anything done because of this weird gun culture that we have. Maybe it's because we're a country that was literally founded on local militias.
Yeah.
You know, maybe that has something to do with it. But
yeah.
And I'll tell you one thing that also frustrates the hell out of me. Two things. This rebuttal that gun ownership of private citizens is what protects us from tyrannical rule.
Yeah.
Number one, has anyone seen the military budget recently?
Yeah. Do you know what you're up against?
We don't stand a chance. I would join the military if that ever happened.
Yeah.
Because goddamn, I am not lasting very long when a fucking panzer tank rolls down my street and says, hey, what are you doing?
That's out of touch. That's how far we are. The panzer. What's the most feared weapon in all of Europe?
But
it's a fucking tin can by today's standards.
Well, that would be what the people have, though. We would have the panzer.
We would make one in like a garage. Somebody has like a replica they're just waiting to bust out.
And
or
you
like,
know,
it's like the killdozer. Have you ever heard of the killdozer?
I don't want to hear about the killdozer.
You don't know about the killdozer?
No.
Can we take it aside for the killdozer? That was actually another rampaging lunatic who didn't like what he owned a machine shop somewhere in like some small mountain town. I forget exactly where it was. He took a bulldozer, welded armor plating onto it, and then like rigged up guns to like a bunch of different sides of it. Like he had rifles wired in so that he could like shoot through this like 3-inch slot on either side of the machine, and just went and like destroyed like the municipal building and like all these different government offices. And then like the cafe where the guy was a dick, like he rampaged through this entire town, welded himself inside of this thing and killed himself. So now I don't know how you prevent killdozers from happening. That's a lot. Even if you take the guns out, that's a lot.
Well, mental health.
Yeah.
You know, that's another thing that probably should be discussed, but is kind of one of those things that you end up giving up before you even start because of what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, it's... Now, I'm ignorant to a lot of this, so this is just me pontificating, but...
Yeah.
Back in the day, there were state hospitals, right? Literally loony bins.
Yeah.
And if you encountered somebody who was unfit to be on their own out in society, you presumably would be able to, you know, they literally almost were taken into custody in some way, shape, or form. It's a different form of custody, but, you know, if you get, there's a homeless gentleman who peruses my neighborhood and is pretty well gone. He, you know, has a little shopping cart he pulls around with his stuffed giraffe in it, and he likes to thrash his head very violently around in the middle of the street, and he, for whatever reason, likes to scream racial epithets. Epithets
into heaven,
just in general. And it's really bad, and when kids are around, it's when anyone's around, not even just kids, it's just not a great, it's kind of hard to watch because the guy's just completely fried. But what do you do? That is the one loophole, so to speak, in this conservative ideology nowadays. What does that guy do? He can't just pull himself up by his fucking bootstraps because he doesn't have any shoes on because he's fucking nuts.
Yeah. does what do it you do really with work guy? With him?
So, you know, another client of mine is a mental health professional, and he told me in the response to this latest tragedy that there are a lot of good statistics that say in communities where you heavily invest in the availability of mental health services, violent crime goes down.
Huh.
Almost uniformly across the board. And I just don't know, you know, nowadays where one goes in order to receive mental health care. Where does one go? You can't just wander in somewhere. You could wander in somewhere and get medical care.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, orthopedically or, you know, internal medicine, whatever you are seeking. If you are sick of the body, you can wander into a place and receive treatment.
Yeah.
Where do you go?
You really got to dig for a solid psychologist or psychiatrist. Like, they're not, they don't really advertise a whole lot. And even then, you got to make an appointment. Like, there's no, like, in and out clinic type setting.
And I don't know if you
readily available.
I don't know if that's something that becomes government run. I don't know if that is something that private business will take over. Frankly, I don't care. I just think that something ought to exist. And yeah. I don't know. I mean, in this particular circumstance, unfortunately, that's what's so terrifying about the Vegas situation is I don't think any mental health situation would have. It doesn't seem like that was an issue here. I mean, clearly it was an issue, but no screen. Even if you had background checks on gun purchasing, you wouldn't have got this guy.
Yeah. Well, I think more so than the availability of mental health care is that we need the destigmatizing of being mentally unwell. And like people don't have a tendency not to view mental health as concurrent with like physical bodily health.
Yes, totally.
People see it as two completely separate things, and that people don't really want to, nobody wants to say that they're crazy, but in reality, we're all kind of crazy. Like
shades
you need
of crazy.
To be, you need to stay on top of that kind of thing in order to really live your best life.
I was talking with my girlfriend the other day, and I was saying, you know, the human body is infinitely complex. Fair to say.
Yeah.
We don't even understand a lot of shit that goes on. We don't know really what causes cancer even. There's a lot of unknowns as it relates to the human body because it
there
is so
known
complex.
Known knowns and known unknowns. And
now,
there are unknown unknowns.
Is it also fair to say that the human mind and the human brain is even more complex than the human body?
I would say so.
So it's not weird for someone to come in to a gym or a doctor's office or just to wherever they're going to in a social setting and be like, you know what? My knee really hurts me like quite often. I feel as if I need to do something. I need to strengthen my knee. I need to fix my knee. But people are all aware that the human body is a sticky wicket and they don't think anything of it. They think, all right, yeah, that seems people have bad knees. Fuck it.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do. Get better. But if someone came into that same setting and says, there's just something a little weird going on with my mind, with my brain. There's just something that's...
I got a lot of anxiety for no apparent reason all of the time.
Yeah, or every now and again I get super depressed and down and nothing quite can cheer me up.
Or there's these voices in my head that just, I don't like what they're saying, but they keep saying it louder and louder and it's like I want to argue with them, but they make some good points.
But yet that number one, it's not socially acceptable, but also like... I think, you know, obviously it's well known that there's a stigma surrounding the admission of mental health problems.
Yeah.
But I think that admission is rooted in some to some degree in the failure to recognize, similar to what I was talking about before with strength training, there's a failure to recognize the complexity and the depth of potential issues. Same thing is true of mental health. For some reason, we you know, mental health for us exists on this like very black or white scale.
Yeah.
Either you're fucked up or you're normal.
Yeah.
But in reality, you know, as you had mentioned, we're all shades of crazy. And it's, we live in an environment where one cannot be truthful about their shade of crazy because you just get labeled, much like our political system, you're either alt-right or social justice warrior. In the mental health situation, you get labeled as crazy or normal. When yep. those are the only two situations that could ever be.
Yeah. You can't be anywhere in the middle. And also to seek help. And then you also, there's a lot of interjection in terms of different religious beliefs. Yes. Where it is, there's a lot less religious, you know, blockage in terms of like medical help and going to a doctor. There's a little bit more in terms of like, well, just, you know, why don't you just pray the problems away.
Yes, or, that's,
and sometimes like the people who think they are talking to God are not, so, like sometimes he talks back, but it's not really God talking to him. Or is it? Ooh, scary thought.
Or sometimes you're a Ted Bundy and you espouse the benefits of praying the gay away and you can get discovered with three gay prostitutes and a mountain of cocaine. Just fuck it, let's party.
That wasn't Ted Bundy.
Oh, no, Ted Bundy
was a very, very heterosexual serial killer.
Oh, what the fuck was that guy's name then? Who was the Ted something? He was the famous pastor.
Okay, I know who you're talking about. This is, we were babies when this happened. I can't remember who it was. He was a Southern guy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like a Bible Baptist guy who was like, gay people are pox upon America. And
blight to...
You can just pray the gay away and God will answer your prayers and he'll take away that
it's
gay.
It's all on coke and meth with
yes.
male prostitutes. It's lining the walls.
Yeah, that's, I mean, hey, maybe he should call Oscar De La Hoya. Those two can fucking party.
I don't know. I think Oscar is just a little bit more okay with who he is. You know, if he's putting on lingerie and boxing gloves, I think he's all right.
That gentleman has partied to a degree that you and I will never quite fully understand.
I'm going to try my hardest.
I mean, I'm rooting for you, buddy, but you have a fucking mountain to climb there. Homeboy, he did it right. He partied.
Yeah.
But, it's, I don't know. It's just, number one, frightening to see that the dialogue is already slowly winding down. I think it's important to also note this virus that seems to have infected the culture is a novel one.
Yeah.
And I think that it has infected the culture because everything is fucking media now. You know, your Gary Vee is a guy who I listen to every now and again. And I understand that a lot of people despise him. And I'll be completely honest. I think he kind of just says the same shit over and over and over again. But he's a charismatic guy and he's somewhat addicting to listen to. So,
and I think some of what he says does bear repeating.
Yeah, he has a lot of good messaging there, and a lot of people come out now and just like, Gary Vee is what's wrong with capitalism. And blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't know. Can the guy just be fucking inspirational and not get shit on for once?
I mean, he acknowledges how capitalism works, but you kind of have to. You can't just pretend like it's not. But if you want to succeed, you have to accept where you are.
And he has this idea that everything is media now. He's like, every company that is dreamed into existence nowadays. It doesn't matter if it's a roofing company or a, you know, peanut butter company. You're also a media company because media is now marketing, advertising. It's all the same thing.
Social media.
And that's another thing he always says that I agree with.
Every single person.
Social media is just the state of the internet. It's not even just a separate thing now. The internet is social media because that's where we do our communication.
Yeah.
The whole world is so focused on social media that all you are encountered with all day are opinions and takes and coverage. And I don't know. And I also think that we're so fixated on social media that hacking... You know, you can hack our culture now because the Russians fucking did, supposedly, allegedly, because we're so fixated on this thing. They made it appear as if culture is dictated by what we see on social media. So they altered what we see on social media, theoretically, allegedly, and
possibly,
you know, changed the public conversation that way.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It sounds strange, but I wonder if this, and this sounds Trumpian, but I hope people will be able to realize how different of a take this is. But I wonder if this current violence problem is also a little bit of a media problem, because we're just inundated with enough information and coverage and this and that and the other thing that, you know, I don't know. I just don't, there's too much media and there's too much opinion sharing.
There's a lot of white noise going through people's heads, and sometimes they really literally can't take it anymore.
And as we previously mentioned, there are no resources available for people who might be starting to hear those voices after observing copious amounts of information. So
yeah,
it's a tricky concoction, a tricky blend of issues there.
Yeah.
But the fights went on. It was a good card. It's there's really no way to segue into.
Yeah, we just got really, real serious.
But all right, it's about our typical 90-minute framework
there. Yeah, Sage Northcutt, if you're out there and you're listening,
listen, we're not going to go out and fully announce this yet, but all we're going to say is we have CM Punk's next opponent.
Oh, we do, and if we can't get CM Punk, and we have Sage Northcutt's next opponent.
One of those. But we've got a champion.
Just waiting in the wings.
Waiting. He's not just waiting. He's training. Every he's getting day. Ready. See you
his
all.
Body is a You'll machine. See.
His body is a industrial line, not just one machine. It's a work line that produces ass kickings.
It's a powerhouse.
It's the cell. It's an ass kicking factory. Because he could trace his lineage back to the industrial age.
Even further.
The colonial era. We'll be in touch, world. All right. White belts everywhere. For Richard.
Yes.
I am C match, as in the sea and lighting a match.
It's wet.
It's wet.
Doesn't work.
Because the show is over, the match is now extinguished. We shall see you all soon. Godspeed.